Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Defender of Caregivers podcast. This is podcast episode number 17, I think. And that's a perfect intro to today's topic, which is that no one is perfect. My name is Lon Kiefer, your host, and I am a caregiver. In fact, I am known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and my expertise is understanding the caregiver personality and advocating for per relationships between professional and personal family caregivers, absent the caregiving flag of fear, loathing, anger, and guilt. That's right, folks, we're all the same people with different walks in life trying to do the same thing, and can't we all just get along? I noticed many, many years ago that the people that I was supposedly leading and working with to provide services to family caregivers had a sort of inherent conflict, yet we all shared the same type of personality and vulnerabilities where we had expectations beyond our ability to meet them. And I now am known as Defender of Caregivers, and I spend all of my time trying to work in that space between the professional and personal family caregivers. I make no bones about, you know, how I make my living these days, and that is by teaching the professional industry how to communicate better with the personal family caregivers. And I do this podcast for personal family caregivers to try and, for lack of a better word, soften them up and be easier on themselves and get a better perspective on both their burdens, their commitments, their obligations, and another perspective on the industry that would like to serve them and that they would need to rely upon if they were to ever allow anybody to join them on their caregiver's journey. So the subtext of today's podcast is, you know, it said no one is perfect, and I just want to say this is there they are. I might have said it one too many times, but you'll get the point behind what I mean by this. But before we get started, let's start with the you might be a caregiver if statement. You might be a caregiver if you feel like a single mistake's... let's try that over. Making mistakes, that's what we're talking about here today. No, I'm not going back and editing and deleting that and going over it, folks. This is me, this is who I am, this is what you get. You might be a caregiver if you feel like a single mistake means you are a total failure without realizing you volunteered or were drafted into the land of best intentions and mistake heaven. Yeah, caregiver distortion number one, all or nothing thinking. You see things in black and white categories if your performance falls short of perfect. You see yourself as a total failure. Well, shame on you. We all fail, and we all fail in various different ways, and sometimes we fail forward. I was reading a book recently by a guy by the name of Robert Kiyosaki. Big fan of his. I should know his first name, right? He wrote the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books and all about entrepreneurs, and I'm reading his book now, Before You Quit Your Day Job. A little late for that, but I'm reading it after the fact. And, you know, he talks about all the mistakes he made and that entrepreneurs continue to make mistakes and they learn from them. Well, in a lot of ways, caregivers are entrepreneurs, because here's the definition of an entrepreneur. And this is just coming to me on the cuff. I didn't plan to say this. I find, frankly, that my unprepared comments are usually better than my prepared comments. So this will deteriorate further as I get into the prepared comments. But here's an unprepared comment and observation. Kiyosaki talks about the definition of an entrepreneur, and I'm not reading this, I'm trying to cite it from memory. It's that essentially you move forward without the necessary or requisite resources on hand to allow you to do so. In other words, you see a path, you see a future that you want to be in, and then you step into it and you sort of make it up along the way and you create the resources, and as the path is revealing itself before you and you're walking down it, if you need a cane, you got to find a cane. If you need a machete to cut leaves out of the way, you cut the leaves out of the way. And now I've gone too far with the off-the-cuff comments, but the point is it's a lot like being a caregiver. You know, none of us have the resources we need to truly fulfill the obligations and commitments that we have before us. So in that regard, we're a lot like an entrepreneur. So Yeah, I started off joking around. I said, there you are, or they are, or what have you. I said it wrong this time, and the point is I wrote it wrong once. As I said earlier, I'm not shy about what I do and how I make my living. And, oh, before I get into that, which is to help the professional industry communicate better and without being such a nuisance or putting pressure on the personal family caregivers, and once they do have a relationship, it's to teach them how to listen more and be collaborative. Actually, I'm speaking next Wednesday in Florida for the Florida Public Health Association, and the topic that they've given me to speak on is let me read it, collaboration through the generations, and the theme of the whole topic is the power of collaboration. So this is a big hot topic in the world at large, but in healthcare in general. And I want to tell you something I'm really excited about. My next book is coming out, hopefully by October, but anyway, let's just say the fall of 2017. And I was after a guy to write a foreword in it. And the guy I was after was a guy by the name of Scott Christopher. And the reason I wanted Scott Christopher to write the foreword of my book is that he wrote a book called The Levity Effect and Why It Pays to Lighten Up. And what Scott did was he wrote a funny book, a real, you know, but a scholarly book as well that was generally accepted in mainstream literature. And he cited all of this studies and outcomes and data that basically says that it's okay to have a sense of humor as a, you know, as a, in business, that it actually makes for better business and a better bottom line. And one of the best examples of that is if you've ever flown Southwest Airlines, you can see that they joke around. And one of the jokes I remember hearing them say, if the oxygen mask should drop, you know, the old thing they say, put it on yourself first and then others second. And they said that, you know, so you put it on yourself first, and then if you're traveling with someone that needs your assistance, like a child, you place it on them. If you're traveling with two children, put it on the one you like the best first. So they always have a sense of humor in the way they go about it, but they also have, that's top down, and you know, the name of my book is The 8 Qualities of Caring Cultures, and the word propergates in there, professional and personal relationships, and it's all based on caring and having a vision about what your mission statement is, and it's to serve other people. Well, in Southwest, their vision and mission statement, I won't go too far into it, I don't have it in front of me, but it's just 5 simple steps, and the first one is that leaders have to care, and you know, they embody that, and they have fun doing it, and they're one of the most profitable airlines. There are no frills. There's not a lot of excitement. They don't even have a first class section. Everybody boards based on when they arrive or when they confirm their seats. A lot of the stuff that other airlines do that make things a little bit, you know, more stodgy or more quote-unquote professional that get them into trouble, Southwest doesn't do. And if you know, it's been a rage lately on the social media and the World Wide Web, the interweb, as Al Gore, the inventor of the internet, would say. You know, there's been these classic examples of just terrible customer service and downright, you know, confrontations between people in the airlines. I mean, that's an intense situation. You know, people are bottled up in small spaces. There's a lot of people. They don't have control over their time nor the direction that they're going, and there's fear involved. So it's kind of like caregiver in the sense that it's an artificial environment, and it can really be very stressful. And, you know, it's been in the news a lot lately about all the terrible things that have happened. Well, not a squeak about Southwest. And I think it's because of, from the top down, that they embrace having fun and having a caring organization. So Scott Christopher wrote this great book, The Levity Effect, Why It Pays to Lighten Up, that I've used in my speaking many times because I'm a humor-based speaker, and I've had some people kind of dismiss what I'm saying because, you know, I'm funny, so therefore I can't be talking about serious topics. Well, shame on them, because frankly, I'm way more serious about what I'm talking about and way more researched in what I'm doing than a lot of the speakers that I've seen who aren't as funny. So anyway, neither here nor there. I want to do something everybody hates. I want to read to you. I want to read to you the foreword that Scott Christopher wrote for my book. Here we go. Everybody wants to be taken seriously, but for me personally, I can never resist the punchline or an easy laugh. Does that mean I lack the ability to be serious or to be taken seriously? Would I be a risky call for a leadership position or difficult to trust and follow? More importantly, does a leader that has a strong focus on the meat and bones of the business have to furrow her brow, clench her jaws, and eschew all enjoyment? When Adrian Gostick is a New York Times best-selling author, as is Scott Christopher now because of his book, he wrote the Carrot Principles. And anyway, when Adrian Gostick and I set out to write our book, The Levity Effect, we started with a premise that levity is a real, positive, and valuable business practice. We were fortunate to find myriad industry leaders that provided us with firsthand, real-world results that made our premise credible. Without their cooperation and passion for lightening up at work, our book would have flopped like a blonde joke at a Now rally. And remember, that's Scott Christopher writing that joke, not me. In The Eight Qualities of Caring Cultures, Lon Kiefer has demonstrated a penchant for humorous observations, practical and caring direction, and the infinite wisdom to cite the levity effect as one of many sources making his premise credible. By the way, I have three different, I'm so excited about this, New York Times best-selling authors that are lending their support for this book by either writing the foreword or writing a jacket review and endorsement. Over the past decade, our Levity book has served to help thousands of leaders learn why it pays to lighten up. And if our work helped encourage Lon, gave him the confidence and credibility to dig deeper in his efforts to affect change and create caring cultures, well then our work here is done. But seriously, folks, lighten up, read this book, and open your heart and mind to a lighter, more fun, more caring culture that will allow you to enjoy the results and outcomes you seek. Before you know it, you will have created a team and an environment that will have you laughing all the way to the bank. Scott Christopher, author of People, People, The Levity Effect, The 7 Ups of Happiness, and so on and so forth. I mean, this is a very accomplished guy. He's an actor. He speaks nationally, and I am so honored, Scott, if you're listening, which you're not. But if you are, thank you. Thank you for caring, Scott. And to everybody else out there, I'm done reading, but this is a passionate moment for me, and here's the analogy I want to share with you. I reached out and asked for help, something I was too shy or embarrassed to do. I didn't think my work was worthy of it before, or I was too stubborn or what have you, but I am amazed that when I reach out and ask for help, how many people will respond and assist me. So, anyway, enough for that. Let's get on to the inspiration for today's podcast, which is that no one is perfect, and there they are. They did it better that time. So I had a client that I was working with, and I'm still working with them, but they got really upset because they wrote, you know, they used an article of mine or a blog of mine, and apparently I misspelled, well, I didn't misspell it, I misused the word there. As you know, there's a bunch of different theirs. There's there, there they are, there's the, you know, what have you. And I put a there instead of a there. You got me? You got what I said there? They were upset about a typo. I mean, they got great feedback about the content of the article, and people said thanks for the help, but somebody had to focus on that typo. Remember, all or nothing thinking. You see things in black and white categories. If your performance falls short of perfect, you see yourself as a total failure. Now, I want you to read between the lines here. I'm not complaining about my client, even though they were complaining about me. No, the issue is that my client is serious. They want to do a good job. They're hyper serious, and they have a brand. Of course, I'm not going to say who the brand was, but the professional industry, the ones that, there's really several different categories, but the ones that really care and really try, some of them take it so seriously, and others are seriously lighthearted about it, and they understand mistakes will be made, but they just can't be made in a way that is going to harm anybody, you know, in the physical sense. But it's okay with a typo, and I have thousands of examples in marketing over the years where, I mean, somebody had a, you know, a multi-$1,000 expense on a print ad in Baltimore years ago, where they said that they were serving a special that week of crap soup, And of course, they meant crab, and it, you know, it was in Baltimore, so everybody loves crab soup in Baltimore. But yeah, it got through several edits and was published in the Baltimore Sun, if I remember correctly, in a very expensive ad for crab soup. And I'm sure somebody probably lost their job, but the play out on it is that they had landmark sales. Everybody thought it was hilarious, and they wanted to go in and get a and take a picture with, you know, the crab soup people. And anyway, we can talk about crap later, but you know, it just wasn't a big deal. But I want you to get the sentiment behind what's happening here. The professional caregivers are just trying so hard that they too get caught up into the same trap that you get caught up in, is that if they think they made a single mistake, it's going to, you know, color the, you know, perspective of their entire brand. You know, their brand used a misspelled word. And so, you know, God forbid, right? Well, come on now. At least that was my approach. I took it on the chin. I said I'll do better. And by the way, they proofread what they were going to use before they used it. But anyway, I'm belaboring the point. You get the point that I'm making. But let's have a little bit of fun with there. So I looked up there. You know, there's they are, there, they are, and there's there, which is people belonging to or associated with, and then there, T-H-E-R-E, is a place, that place or location. So if I said there they are, what I'm saying is they are people belonging to or associated with that place. Yes, they are. So anyway, okay, it wasn't funny, but I thought it was a point that I could actually make a sentence. There they are. And it kind of made sense if you put the meaning of each of those words back to back. So how many of us remember Nadia Comaneci in the Olympics? This is what perfection does for us. So Nadia Comaneci, I don't even remember when it was. It was probably 80, thereabouts. I do no research, folks. I do some preparation, but I do no research before these podcasts. I know my subject, but I don't necessarily know history. So Nadia Comaneci, I remember her. She was like 13 or 14 years old. She was Romanian. Bella Caroli, was that his name? Sergei Caroli? Anyway, he was the coach, and, you know, they had this, you know, great bond, and, you know, he took her in and taught her at such a young age, and she got the first perfect score in women's gymnastics at the Olympics. And I might have just made that up. I might be wrong. It might not have been the first perfect 10, but let's just go with the story. That's my recollection of it. Everything else in this podcast is entirely accurate, but that might be wrong. But I do remember making such a big deal about the perfect 10, and it just all seemed so innocent. This little girl, this preteen, I mean, she hadn't even gone through puberty yet, and she's getting a perfect 10. Everybody made such a big deal out of it. And so, you know, and then she did it again later in the Olympics. I mean, she might have done it 3 or 4 times or 5 times, and I don't remember. I think she came back to another 2 or 3 Olympics, and, you know, after she grew up and her body matured or what have you, and she had more weight or with her, she became less perfect or what have you. But anyway, she was the one that sort of established this standard of expectation of perfection. And I talk about in my book that perfection leads to defection, and I'm not going to read that passage from the book. But remember, folks, I'm not selling you my book, You Might Be a Caregiver If. you care for yourself and wonder what, you know, heck, I just got the daggone title of it wrong. But anyway, if you would like a copy of my book, I will be glad to send you a PDF copy of it via email. I want you to have the book. I'm not trying to sell it, but I talk about perfection leading to defection, is because if our standard of performance is perfection and perfection only, we can't do anything. You know, talk about me singing and being a horrible singer, and the only way that I could participate in singing in a choir or a church or something like that is with silence. I would have to defect from the invitation to participate because I can't be perfect. But if that's the expectation, we drive ourselves crazy. I mean, you know, remember later, 10, 15 years later. Maybe we're at the 90s now. We had all the debacle with Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding and ice skating where they're busting each other's knees and things like that. I mean, our expectations can ruin ruin reality. And our expectations of others can be way too high. Remember in other podcasts and future podcasts, I have this theory about, I call it reap to sow, revealing expectations and exceeding promises to serve others well. The other day I was calling on a client, IntegraCare. They have about 8 or 10 assisted living communities, mostly in Pennsylvania and Maryland. And I was just amazed with how structured and how caring an organization they are. And they have this program called the Tapestry Program. And I'm not sure the actual definition of tapestry. Remember, I do know preparation. But to me, tapestry is like, you know, like the fabric of something or the wallpaper. It just implies to me that it is something that is ever-present in an environment. And that is how they're using the term tapestry. They have this orientation that they take all families through where they talk about expectations. And I've never been through it. I don't know all the specifics on it, but it's a very formalized program. And everybody that moves into that community is invited and, I dare say, expected, there I go with the word expectations, to participate and attend. And they say things like, hey, when your loved one is here, we do everything to provide a safe environment and to be responsive, but we are not 24 hours standing there with our arms around your loved one to ensure that they will never fall or they will never bump into a wall or something like that. But you know, these are the things that you can count on. And I mean, I think that's amazing. I mean, that they do that. I've been preaching it for years, but this is the first company I've ever come across that actually does it as a part of the fabric, the tapestry of their organizational culture and the relationships they build with the people they serve. One of the keys about expectations, when you reveal expectations and exceed promises, is as you are doing this, it's kind of an implied negotiation. If somebody has an expectation that you, and I don't care who you are, whether you're the professional or the personal side of the equation, if you feel that expectation is unrealistic, you have an obligation to you know, say that, to share that so that you can sort of reset the bar of expectations. And, you know, I do stand-up comedy every now and then. A bunch of years ago, I got my start as a public speaker, as a professional stand-up comedian. And I still do it every now and then, and I'm a totally clean comic. I don't curse, and I talk about clean topics. But I did this thing about, owning a puppy. And, you know, the joke was that, you know, I'm in my 50s now, and I don't really understand the world that we're in. I mean, I have a puppy now, and I spoil it rotten. And it's a little dog. I've never had a little dog before, and I spoil this dog something terrible. And I admit it. And my buddy, Jim, comes over, and he says, you know, when I die, I want to come back as your dog. And I'm like, oh, really? Jealous much? I mean, your desire is to die and come back as my dog. I mean, what am I not rubbing your belly enough, Jim? Are you seriously telling me that you would like to come back to a world where you eat whatever I choose to give you, whenever I choose to feed it to you, and then afterwards you'll jump up on my lap and lick my face in gratitude? Is that the world you want? And Jim stuck his toe in the ground as if digging a hole and looked down and said, well, you know, dog is man's best friend. And I said, no, he's not. You're my best friend, and I have never followed you around in the backyard with a Walmart bag on my hand waiting for you to do your business. So society has progressed to the point where grown men are expected to go around picking up after small dogs. And my finishing joke on this is we're not progressing as a society when handling the feces of another species. I don't even shake hands anymore. We've ruined it for everybody. So, end of the sort of comedic bit, but, you know, this is the kind of thing that we can do with expectations that we have of others. I mean, we set high expectations and we don't call them out. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to follow my dog around everywhere we go. I mean, yes, if we're in public and I'm being judged by the public and by the world at large, you know, I'll conform to their expectations. You know, I'll follow my dog around with a bag and clean up after him. I think that's only appropriate. I mean, I think that's the least amount of consideration that we can give to our fellow man. But in my own backyard, I mean, I live in the woods. I mean, no, I don't do that. My girlfriend, yeah, I've morphed to the age where I can use the term girlfriend. Vicky always asks me all the time, so did Chance the rescue dog. Oh, by the way, go to Facebook and check us out. There's a great picture of Chance and I in the Docmobile when we called on, Candlelight Assisted Living in Easton, Maryland with IntegraCare. We called on them yesterday. There's a great video of me going back to Baywater Rescue to thank them for letting me have Chance, and I had to return some things that I had from them because I was a bad boy. They started me off with a bowl and a leash and a big dog crate and all this stuff, and I essentially stole Chance. I did pay my fee and I did the paperwork over the phone, but I never, you know, went back to do what I was supposed to do on the admissions process. So, you know, I did not meet their expectations of me. And I felt bad about it, and I made the promise that I would return because they wanted a picture for Facebook, which they haven't posted, by the way. But just a great Facebook Live video about this. By the way, the date of this, if I don't know, you might listen to this 20 years from now. It's July 19th, 2017, when this video was on live Facebook. It's about a 1.5-2 minute video of me driving up with Chance and telling him we're going back to the roots. And I don't know if this dog recognized where he came from or what, but literally he was all excited and paying attention. And when I told him where we were going, he sat down on the shotgun seat in the Docmobile and looked away from me like he was depressed or upset. And I guess I'll never know, but I couldn't believe he did it. I'm officially off topic now. I don't even know why I'm talking about this. So we went in and we, you know, I kept my promise. I went in and I asked, is there any paperwork that we needed to do? Here's all the things you gave me. Thank you so much for bringing Chance into my life. And but on the way there, we stopped at IntegraCare at Candlelight Cove in Easton for a 100th birthday party, and to call on, her name is Sissy Nichols, she's the executive director there, and we've done some work together, and she agreed to let me bring Chance into her community for a few minutes to meet with her. Chance is not quite ready to meet with the world. The expectation of the world is that nothing bad will ever happen, and in this regard, I completely agree. I cannot afford to take Chance somewhere, even though everybody's asking and people are excited. I can't afford to take him somewhere and meet with a resident or the proverbial, and folks, I got hand quotes here, finger quotes around this term, little old lady, and have him in his excitement cause a skin tear with her fragile skin. And, you know, I just know that'll happen. He's not ready yet. But what he is ready for is someone that knows what they're getting into. So I'm trying to take Chance places where he can meet people in a formal setting for the first time, and he and I can work on getting over that excitement. And, you know, I'm teaching him to say hello. And what he does, and he really does it, is that he lays down, he rolls over, and he exposes his belly. But as soon as you go to rub his belly, he jumps up and attacks you joyfully. But we got to work on that. You know, we got work to do. We're something short of perfect, but I'm not stuck in all or nothing thinking where I see things in black and white categories. And if Chance's performance falls short of perfect, I see him as a total failure. He's not a total failure. He, like all of us, is a work in progress. And he's getting better each time. And I really do hope that in another year or so, or less, he might be ready to go out and conquer the world. Okay, now anybody out there that has a relationship with Dunkin' Donuts, you know, let's get them on board. We need Dunkin' Donuts as a sponsor so Chance and I can go around in a Doc Mobile and changing lives and taking coffee and donuts with us. We'll call them Dunkin' Drops or Doc's Dunkin' then Doc or Doc and Dunkin' or something DD related. But you know, we're enjoying the time we're spending in the field, but we'd like to have more. We'd like to bring more value. And who doesn't like a hot cup of coffee and a fresh donut in the morning? But anyway, I'm getting off topic, which I tend to do a lot. Now, I want to talk about failure and learning to accept it and learning to be okay with it, be okay with the mistakes you made. Because, you know, I did an earlier podcast where it's all about your effort and your intent, and you really do not have control over the outcomes. And that even includes how you're... So how many of you use text? And why am I sitting here in a room doing a recording and asking people to answer a question? That's a, you know, that's a rhetorical question. I know nobody's going to answer it, but you know, we all use text nowadays. Even the traditionalists are increasingly using text versus voice communication. They're not quite there with email, but they're definitely there with their little smartphones and text. I mean, I remember the first time my mother texted me. You know, I immediately called the police and reported her missing and her phone stolen, because I'm like, what? Little mom is texting now? And now I can't get her to stop. She texts me all the time, and half the time they don't make sense, but this isn't time for me to pick on little mom. But the reason that they don't make sense is because she's like really bad at it, and there's autocorrect, and it says things that she didn't mean to say. So I've gotten really good at deciphering what she meant to say. And you know what? We're all good at that. We all recognize the best of intentions when we see them. We recognize that perfection is not reality, and we're really kind of ready for that. I mean, we might live in a world where we can't tolerate a little bit of dog poop, but, you know, and that's an imperfection that is just not going to be tolerated. But a typo or a misstatement, unless it's on Twitter and it has to do with politics or any of the other stuff, you know, you're not allowed to make mistakes there. But when you're texting someone you're in a relationship with, and that is the key, when you are communicating with someone that you are in more than a casual or passing relationship, we get it. Mistakes are made, and we can meet each other halfway, and we judge people by their intentions and their history, not their individual moment. And this is what I'm trying to teach the professional side of the industry. When someone is reading a communication that we are sharing, whether it's on Facebook or through an email or through a text message, because believe it or not, we have people that literally want regular text messages. And I'm trying to teach the industry that people that want that stuff, you know, really want it, and you need to be able to provide it, and you need them to be able to get into that seamlessly, and that you should do all of your communication through the means by which the decision maker, the family caregiver, the personal family caregiver, has told you to stay in your lane. Don't communicate them outside of that avenue or outside of the times that have been established until you're invited to do so. So you need to find a way to stay in touch with these folks and nurture them with content and meaningful information, not sales information, but meaningful information that will nurture them and help them and reinforce them in their caregiver's journey. And then when the family caregiver reaches out to you and invites you to communicate with them, boom, everybody's so much further along, and we don't have to worry about making a slight mistake at that point, because now we're in more of an intimate relationship, and we've been invited into that because we've earned our way into that relationship. This is critically important for both sides to understand that that's the goal, and that that is what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to move anyone in any direction. I'm trying to get people in their clear-thinking, rational mind, where they're avoiding distorted thinking, and they're making good decisions for all concerned. I feel like I had a thought that I'm trying to pull out, and I don't really... have it. Now, here's when you're allowed to break that rule. If either party has broken a promise. Like, if the promise is, you know, I'll only contact you this way until you tell me something, and they break that promise, hold them accountable for that. Or if you, the family personal caregiver, make a promise to follow up or to do something and then you don't, please understand that you've invited them to take the next step and push harder and try more, and you may not realize it, but that's what you've done. So the very thing that you may not want to have happen, where you're getting, for lack of a better word, bothered or nagged, you're creating it by not responding. And if you were to, and I know why you do it. You got caregiver personality. You're people pleasers. It's hard to upset someone or say no to someone. But trust me, saying no to them or saying not now, I'll keep communicating. I'll keep letting you communicate with me through these systems. But please don't call me. You know, I will let you know when the time is right. That is very valuable. And if they don't heed that invitation to, you know, as Jack would say from, I'm glad to, I don't even remember what show it was, from to take it down a few notches, then that'll tell you something too. But let's reveal our expectations, exceed our promises, and hold each other accountable along the way. And that's how we can learn to serve others well. And that's how we can avoid this trap of expectation and all-or-nothing thinking. Because what ends up happening is we think, oh, that happened, therefore I cannot communicate with this person anymore. Or this is an unacceptable thing. It's okay to make mistakes once you're in a relationship. But you need to know when you're in the relationship. And once an introduction has been made, and you take away that anonymity, and you introduce this sort of dialogue, this revealing expectation, exceeding promises kind of thing, the goal then is to keep your promises, not to be perfect. So, you know, let's realize that I'm going to shift now completely to the personal caregiver world. Let's realize the moment you're in. And take the joy in that moment and praise yourself for the things that you do well, rather than focusing on the things that you don't do well. I'm going to do something again and read to you again. This is from another book of mine. Again, send me an email. I'll send you a copy of it free. This one's called Get Out of Bed and Go to Work, Short Stories and Tall Tales About Awesome Living. And AWESOME, of course, is an acronym. And I've never shared this book with you before on the podcast, this is from the foreword, and I'm talking about myself, and I like to go back and read this, because I don't even remember when I published this book, but it kind of lets me know where I was back in the day. This might have been, I don't know, 2012 or so, 2011 when this came out, I don't know. But this comes from the foreword of the book, and I'm talking a little bit about myself and, frankly, why people should listen to me. My dreams were and are simple dreams: getting the next promotion, building a deck on the back of my house to enjoy the spring mornings and fall evenings, watching my daughter get married, no time soon, mind you, having a career that stimulated my mind and provided for my needs and a few but not all of my wants, meeting, marrying, and spending the rest of my days with a woman I love. I didn't dream of winning the lottery. I didn't still do dream of dunking a basketball and being able to dance the salsa. Nor did I dream of living on a remote island with a staff of nubile young women to fan me and feed me grapes. I dreamed simple dreams for a simple and humble man, but nonetheless, I was focusing on the dreams and not the moment where my dreams were actually coming true. And in that precise way, I am a failure. You know what? I'm still a failure. Let me think. I'm divorced. Technically, if you ask some people, I'm unemployed. No, I'm not. I work for myself. I'm a caring entrepreneur. What do I have? I didn't watch my daughter get married, but I watched my son get married recently. That made the stand-up comedy act. I never was able to dunk a basketball. and I haven't learned to dance the salsa, but there's still time. And anyway, the point of it is that we can't focus on our expectations, especially when we're already exceeding any reasonable expectation that we ever should have established in the first place. So I'm a failure, and I'm happy to be a failure. And as Kiyosaki says in his book, you know, before you quit your day job, you know, he failed forward. He had several businesses that failed before he became a household name and a multimillionaire. And, you know, you're going to fail in many ways if you have that standard of yourself of perfection or of doing everything a certain way. Things are never going to be done the certain way that you think they're going to be done. And entrepreneurs and caregivers never have enough resources at hand to meet the commitments to travel the path that they're on. We always have to be open to another way and other people to help us. And if you define your journey and your vehicle and your path too narrowly, you're getting caught up in expectations that are probably false and probably not fair. And if somebody in your world that you trusted was allowed in and you revealed to them what those expectations were, they would probably let you know they're unrealistic. And so my promise to you, and I'm going to exceed this promise, is that I'm going to keep pumping out this content. I'm going to keep communicating with the industry, trying to teach them that it's okay to put a there instead of a there. As long as what you're trying to do is genuine and well-meaning, and that you're going to take a nurturing approach, and that you're going to quote-unquote stay in your lane, and that you're going to reveal expectations of one another and exceed the promises you make in that process in order to serve others well. And I'm not sure if we've found an end to the podcast here, but I'm going to wrap it up. Notice I'm not spending so much time on the whole sponsor thing. Unless Dunkin' Donuts comes on board, I'll spend a lot of time on them. Dunkin' Donuts, if you're out there, you really need to get on board. All I want is some free donuts to give out. And maybe that you'll let me park in your parking lot from time to time when I'm on the road. But I do want to mention Senior Life Co. real quickly, because I do want to encourage people to reach out, to find out what's out there, to accept the input of others. And Senior Life Co. is a place where you can leave your reviews of your experiences and others can read them. And remember, as you're reaching out on the internet, try and take a minute to dig below the paid searches and find the actual people you're going to communicate with. Go over in the little box that Google provides you and go directly to them. Don't take the ads. Don't take the paid-for searches. There are people out there that make you actually think you're calling that provider, and you're not. All you have to do is take a step further. Go to Google and click on their actual website. Don't be fooled by those paid searches. If we can all just figure that out, we'll have more direct dialogue with the people that you want to start your relationships with, and your communications will be directly with those people, and a third party won't be involved. You don't need that third party. Trust me on that. If you don't, call and ask me why. So you ready to wrap this up? You ready for our closing remarks, which is always the caregiver's vow. Now repeat after me if you like. I am proud of who and what I am. I am a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others, and I sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. I will honor myself as I care for others. This is my solemn caregiver's vow. Okay, everybody, that's it for the podcast. Hit us up on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers. Find us on Twitter at Doc Defender. Still not big on Twitter, but I'm trying. Reach out and you know, find us on Facebook. Check out Chance and the Docmobile. Chance, the rescue dog. That's it, folks. Got to run. Love y'all. See you next time. Remember, in everything you do, think also of you. Honor yourself as you care for others. See you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for caring.